What is up, Daddy Gang? It is your founding father, Alex Cooper, with Call Her Daddy.
Thank you for coming. I'm going to go finish my
stretching. Yes, go. Go. Good seeing you. This is insane.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Some things work so well. It's basically magic. Like my favorite highlighters that I'm like, wow, how did you all of a sudden make me look glowing? And you know what else really works, Daddy Gang? Shopify. It is a global commerce platform that helps you sell. I've seen a big difference in my online merch sales. They are especially good at turning browsers into buyers. I can see someone that's been on the site but didn't check out, or someone that checked out and then is revisiting the site. Like, if you want to grow your business, Daddy Gang, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/unwell, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/unwell.
Simone Biles, welcome to Call Her Daddy. I feel like we've been waiting for this for so long. Okay, we need to tell the Daddy Gang the story. So I would say, like, I don't know, maybe like a couple years ago, I don't remember who DM'd who. No, I remember. You tagged me in a story that you were watching Call Her Daddy, and I lost my mind because I was like, wait, she listens? Like, and then I started pressuring. I'm like, oh my God, I need to like do better. Like, I need to impress Simone. Like, but it was such a cool full circle moment that we started DMing and we had this like DMing relationship here and there. And then when NBC and I started working together for the Olympics, I remember we sat down and they were like, okay, like what person do you want to interview? Yeah. And immediately I was like, Simone. And like, of course, they're like, LOL, like, that's so cute. Like, of course, everyone wants to interview Simone. I'm like, no, like, I need to interview her. And they're like, do you know her? And I'm like, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, we're pen pals like that. Yeah. And now we're finally here.
Thank God.
It's perfect.
Yes.
Okay, so we were just at your parents' gym. Mm-hmm. Watching from previous documentaries that you've done to watching it all get built to you now, like, having your own gym and how supportive your parents have been, like, what does that support mean to you?
For me, it means the world because being adopted since I was 6 years old to now, it's been a long road and journey, like career-wise and just like who Simone is instead of Simone Biles. So it's been a long journey, but their support means the world to me. They've never really missed a competition, anything besides 2020 Olympics, 2021, whatever we want to call it. That's the only thing they missed because they weren't allowed to go because of COVID. But other than that, they've supported everything that I've ever wanted to do, all of that stuff since I was a young girl.
When you say the word Simone Biles to the world, I think everyone immediately thinks Olympian, the GOAT.
Yeah.
And I think there's like a lot of people that probably don't know where you came from and the backstory of like your life hasn't always just been this picture perfect situation. Right. When you were three, you went into foster care.
Yes.
Can you just share just a little bit like what was going on at home that led to that?
I was only 3 years old, so I learned that a little bit whenever I was older, but drug and alcohol abuse. And so I just don't think that she was around too much and people, you know, would call CPS or see us out and about. So that's kind of what happened. That's when foster care came and got us and placed us into a foster home. And so the only thing that I remember was just being anxious when we would go to sleep because my brother was in the room next door. And I think we were just always used to sleeping together or close or whatever because he's not that much older. And mind you, we were three. And so I just had anxiety problems. So we were in a girls' room. They had girls' rooms and boys' rooms. And from my knowledge that sometimes during the night or during the day, they would take kids out and replace them into a different home. And that's usually how siblings were separated. So I was just so terrified that if I woke up, my brother wouldn't be there. Even though I was with my sister, I was like, oh, we all have to stay together, kind of that thing, even from a young age. So I'd always sneak in and go sleep with him because I'm like, oh, this is my brother, you know, because I didn't understand the separation whenever at nighttime. Fast forward a couple years later, I was at gym and I knew I was adopted. From the moment we were adopted, my family told us, you guys are adopted. And I was like, cool, okay.
Right.
Great. Like, I don't know what that means, but, and then they had asked us if we wanted to call them mom and dad. And from my knowledge, I was like, perfect. Like, why wouldn't I? And so it was just super strange to me because I remember this day at gym. We were talking about our families and they had said something. And I was like, oh, well, I'm adopted. And it felt like everything in the room and the gym stopped. And they were like, what? You're adopted? Because that was not to their knowledge. And I was like, why is everyone freaking out? And so I was like, well, you know, my parents, those are my grandparents. My uncles that I call my brother now, those were my uncles. And so I just remember we all sat on the floor. Practice stopped because everybody needed to know the story. Like, the coaches were intrigued. Everybody, they were like, you're adopted? And I was just kind of like, well, yeah, aren't you? Where'd you come from? I'm just like so confused.
Right. It was normal for you.
When they say the stork brings the babies, I'm like, how did you get here?
Stop.
I'm like, you weren't picked.
Wait, like, you weren't in a house and then
you weren't adopted. So like that was shocking to me.
Did your parents ever talk to you about your biological parents?
Kind of funny because no, because I'm not sure the relationship, maybe because we didn't ask either, but we knew who it was as we got older, Shannon, and that's kind of what we just address her as. But I knew once I got older that that's my dad's daughter, and then that's also crazy explaining to people because I'm like, my biological mom is also my dad's daughter, and I call him dad. So it's just like everybody's hella confused.
It's a whole family tree that you're like, don't make me explain it. My parents are my parents. I got chosen, feeling blessed.
Yes.
Let's move on.
Literally.
Oh my
God. I'm like, if you think too hard, it just gets jumbled.
So your grandparents adopted you at 6.
Yes.
And now they're your parents.
Yes.
Boom. How do you think that did change, though, like the trajectory of your life?
Everything. I have no idea where I would be without being adopted. Unfortunately, I might end up the same statistic that other foster kids unfortunately end up. And you know, at 18 years old, you get kicked out of a foster home. So then you're homeless.
Right.
If you don't get into college and stuff, which most people don't graduate high school, you're on the street. So like, I fear for what my life would have looked like.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's incredible to see what you have all built together as a family. I love how in the beginning you just quickly are like, and then when I'm at the gym, back up. Okay. You are the greatest of all time.
Yes.
Let's talk about when you first got into gymnastics. Mm-hmm. Like, do you remember? Did you just think of it as a hobby? Were you passionate about it? Like, how did you get into gymnastics?
We got into gymnastics, I say we as me and my sister, from a daycare field trip. Again, I believe everything happens for a reason. In this day, we're here in Texas, if nobody knows.
We're here in Texas.
We were supposed to go on a field trip to the oil ranch. Like, how country, how Texas is that?
Okay.
And then we wind up at the gym. And it's because it was storming that day, so they're like, that's an outside activity. Where are we going to take the kids? And so I feel like God was like, take the kids to the gym and see what happens. And so we end up at the gym. And I see these girls, and mind you, I've never seen gymnastics in my life. They're flipping around all of the things. And me, 6 years old, I'm like, I could do that. Like, not knowing, I just like feel like I could do that. And I'm watching them, super intrigued. Somebody does something, I do something, and then the coaches look over and they're like, can you do that again? Like, what did you just do? Have you ever been to gymnastics? I was like, no, this is my first time. And I did it again, and they're looking at my body build. And if I show you pictures whenever I was younger, like I was built, like I was ripped for no reason. That's just how I was built. And so they were like, you've never done a sport. Your body stature is like, it's made for gymnastics. And they're like, that's not normal. And so they sent a letter home and I gave it to my parents. My mom saw it and she was like, okay, do you want to do the one with the four events or do you want to do tumbling? And then maybe you'll go to cheerleading. And I was like, I want to do the one with the four events. And that's how I started.
It is truly fascinating that, like, some people you hear that are so great, like Tom mm-hmm. Brady, for example, you yeah. think of Tom and they're like, oh, he was a little awkward and it's like kind of crazy that like yeah. Tom can even like run the way he can.
Yeah.
For you, it's the complete opposite where like you walked into the gym and people were like, yeah. who is that girl?
Yes.
And you had never done any of this before. Cause I was going to ask you, like, was there ever, once you started, an mm-hmm. aha moment that you were like, holy shit, I'm actually really yeah. good at this?
Never for me. Everybody else always saw it. And since I was always the smallest in my class, the shortest, I thought they would always be like, oh my God, she's so good. She's so cute. She has so much talent. I just thought it was like what your grandmother does when she comes around every year. Like, oh, you look so good. Like, I thought really that's what it was. And I'm like, you're just saying that because I'm so short. So it took a while for me to really like lean into my talent and to realize, oh my gosh, I could do something or be someone. Because once I started, I did it for fun. Nobody in my family has ever done gymnastics, so they have no idea where the talent came from. My siblings were really good at track, but that's kind of it.
Were you in school? Did people make comments about how short you were? Like, were that you were
short? Yes, because like you could always grow. So right. they were like, we're just waiting for her growth spurt, which I'm still waiting. I tell God, like, finish it when I'm done with gymnastics. So maybe we're not done yet. I mean, the doctor probably thinks my growth plates are closed, but that's a different story.
I love it. You're like, but, it's going to happen.
But other than that, they all saw it. They would say, like, they gave me this nickname, Soldier, because my muscles and all of this stuff. And so, like, one time I beat this kid up on the playground because he said, oh, I bet you can't beat me up. And I was always the kid that if you said I couldn't do something, I'm doing it. And I think I'm still that way. Like, I'm doing it.
I was going to say, I feel like getting into this sport, any sport that yeah. at the competitive level that you're dealing with, you have to have such discipline and mm-hmm. drive. And I'm wondering, like, where did that come from, this competitiveness in you?
I don't know. But if I had to pinpoint, like, my parents were very hard workers. Me and my sister were pretty much always on top of our schoolwork. And we were just kind of self-driven. And I don't know where it came from, but I think it started from my parents, just seeing how hard they work, everything that they've done for us, for our siblings. It's kind of something that was a little bit taught in that nature too.
Yeah. When you do compete at this level, I know that for athletes, it's like, it's not just you committing your life. It's yeah. your entire family has to get on yeah. board. It's a lifestyle change. When do you think you guys really all decided, like, oh, as a family, we're going for this?
Probably the whole family started making sacrifices when my practices started going late mm. and then dinner time started to change, or they would have to leave stuff in the oven or on the stove. And they were like, okay, she's really doing this. But none of us knew how far it was going to take us and to end up where we are. We just kind of thought, like, oh, she's doing these flips. She likes it. She enjoys it. As long as she's having a good time, we're going to let her continue. Because my parents were always the first to say, if you want to quit, let us know. We'll pull you out.
Because you went to public school till eighth grade, right?
Correct.
And then you officially did homeschooling starting high school. Did you get yeah. to have any, like, typical teenage experiences? Like, did None. You go to prom?
None. The first time I danced with a boy was on Dancing with the Stars with Sasha, and it was after the Olympics. I was, like, 19 years old. I remember he, like, got in my face, grabbed me, and I was like, ah! Like, freaking out.
Simone.
No.
No.
Talk about, like, a culture shock.
I was about to say the fact. I need to hear if there's anyone in the world that could say that statement. The first time I ever danced with the boy was on yeah. Dancing with the Stars. Literally. Icon.
Yeah.
Icon. Like, it's Thank giving, you. Like, only you. Crazy. Are you kidding? Okay, so you never got – did you have sleepovers?
Some, but then at that time, we had moved, like, 40 minutes away. So if we ever wanted to have a sleepover, it was more like, your mom drops us off, your dad brings her, because, like, the distance. So other than that, we'd have some best friends come sleep over. But then it was kind of like, okay, if you stay over on Friday, you're not leaving till Sunday. So we had sleepovers, but then again, it started turning into, sorry, I have practice on Saturday, so then go to the gym, we'll drop you off, that sort of thing.
It's like your life revolved around it.
Everything Which revolved is, around gymnastics.
And if people don't play sports, like, I look back, I'm like, okay, can I relate to that? I'm like, yeah, growing up, most of my friends were just yeah. soccer friends, because you're just kind of just become this family friends. And they're like your sisters.
Yeah. I think in middle school, that's when the insecurities started and I kind of became a shell of myself. But I feel like nobody really understood why I was like racing to my locker to get my gym equipment. And then, like, at the time, our housekeeper would take me to practice and all of this stuff. So nothing I did at that point was relatable, and it was very hard to not make friends but to just keep them up, because I couldn't hang out with them on the weekends. I couldn't go to Friday Night Live. I couldn't do anything on the weekends. I was going to a gymnastics meet. I was doing this, that, the other. So to me, it was like, let me get my schoolwork done. I have like three friends, like at the loser table, like, and I'll do my stuff at the gym. And yeah, it was really hard to relate because they're doing who knows what. And like,
they're like texting boys on AIM and you're like in the gym.
I don't
gym.
Know what that is. No. Like, the like, only boy I know is gym.
No, like literally. And did you resent it at all? Like, did you ever be like, oh, why am I doing this? Like, why am I doing this to myself?
At that point, no, because I still love to do it. And I had all my friends at the gym.
Yep.
And that's kind of all I needed at that point. But going into high school, I was like mad at my parents. Like mad as hell. Like, you figure it out why I can't do school and gym. Like, you figure it out. Like, some of my friends could do it because their states allowed that. God. And that's at the time I started doing national team camps. And we missed so much school. So I didn't have a choice. But, like, California, as long as you did your schoolwork, and I can't speak on the rules of the laws now, but it's just how it was back then. They could miss, however, as long as they got their schoolwork done out of it. But Texas law states you can only miss X amount before they fail you, even if you do your schoolwork. So that just wasn't an option for us. And it's not like we were ever going to move or do anything, because like Texas has kind of the best gymnastics. And that's what it was. But I wanted to go to the football games. I wanted to go to the school dances. I wanted to. But it was okay that I didn't, because I knew I wasn't confident enough in my body to show my muscles, because at that time I wore a lot of hoodies and I didn't want my muscles to show, because then at that point I'm stronger than all the boys because they haven't bulked up yet, and I'm just like, hey, nobody really understood, so it was okay.
Right, I get what you're saying. It's almost like it was okay for you to escape to the gym.
Yes.
Because you felt more confident there.
And everybody had muscles and we all looked the same. I do remember one of my friends snuck me into high school one day, and I got to go around with her to each class, and I thought that was the best day ever. I was like, I'm in a high school. And her teachers just played along with it. They were like, if the principal catches us, who knows what we'll do. But I did a whole entire day with her, and that was so cool.
Well, it's incredible to look back, and as much as you sacrificed, the sacrifice has clearly paid off, because when you were 16 is when your winning streak just really began.
Yeah.
You won 3 consecutive world championships, and then you went on to dominate the Rio Olympics. Yeah. When you look back at that time of your life, like, what does that success mean to you?
Well, to me, I thought that's kind of where it ended. And I was like, oh my gosh, how have I reached my greatest achievement in life at 19? I was scared for the rest of my life. Like, how can I beat this? How can I top this? What the heck am I gonna do? I won the Olympics at 19. Like, it's gonna be a shithole from here on out.
So we're going downhill.
Yeah. No, literally, because most people don't get to go to more than one Olympics or do those things. So at one point I was like, I did it. This is my greatest, like, this is the greatest thing that I wanted to achieve in my life. And then I was like, I did it at 19.
You almost like were excited for 2 seconds to then be like, can I even actually enjoy this? Because this, does this mean it's over?
Yes. And so I was scared. But at that time, you couldn't really tell me anything, because I was like, oh my gosh, I did it. And I knew as soon as that happens, we've watched previous Olympics, so we know how their lives change after that. So I knew it was going to be different, but I knew that it was going to be different every day at the Olympics. My followers go up 10,000, and then I had 1 million. And then I was like, what the heck is happening, and why are people following me? I was like, at that point, I was like, yes, this is my greatest achievement, because I've been vying for this since I was 6 years old, per se. But then I was like, but y'all haven't watched the come up, so why do you care? Like, this is my greatest achievement, cool. Right. So it was kind of weird to me that people were following me because I had won the Olympics, because to me that was the biggest thing. But I was like, how's that the biggest thing for you to follow me because I won this? It was kind of weird. And then I was like, okay, I really need to find out who I am without gymnastics, because I didn't think I was going to do it again.
When the rise really started, like, I think about the pressure that people put on you. It's like, oh my God, you're so great. We all are looking at you. You're Simone Biles. You're you just did the Olympics. You're thriving. You're getting gold. Like, did you ever feel like you weren't allowed to have moments of weakness?
A lot of the time, because on a lot of the teams, like a lot of the girls looked up to me. So I felt like I was that strong person that everybody was like, oh my God, Simone's so strong. She has a strong personality. If you had something to describe me as, strong went before that word. So I felt like I could never show a sign of weakness, but I just always felt like I was the strong one for my friends, the strong ones for my family, the strong ones. So it was just kind of like I got to a point where it was so hard for me to cry or show emotion. But I also think that came from gymnastics. It's like throw all that out the window, work on what you need to work on, and then outside of the gym, whatever happens, happens. So, yeah, it was weird, different, difficult. But at that point, again, I'm only 19 years old.
Well, that's like, what I was going to say, though, Simone. Like, when you're saying, like, I had to be strong, like, I'm technically, like, the older yeah. one at the gym. I've now gone to the Olympics. Like, I know what yeah. I'm doing. Like, you're strong for your family. Like, who did you, like, go to say, like, hey, like,
yeah.
I'm stressed. I yeah. have all these followers. I have the world. Like,
a lot of the time, if it wasn't my sister, because we're very, very, yeah. very close, if it wasn't her, silent cries. I didn't like to see anybody, like, I didn't want anybody to ever see me cry.
Why?
Because I didn't want them to show or see that it was a sign of weakness. So it was a lot of silent nights where I would cry because even after the Olympics, I went home and like we went on tour and stuff, but there would be a lot of times where I felt so alone because like how many kids can relate? 19 years old, you won the Olympics and then you have the weight of the world on your shoulders. I'm still learning. It's just like now I'm a celebrity. I don't know what I want to do with my life. I don't know if I can do this again. Everybody's cheering me on. It's just like, it was an overnight sensation, so to speak, even though like people that watched gymnastics watched for the 4 years prior, watched my whole entire career, but to just be like thrown out there, I was kind of confused. But then somebody told me it was lonely at the top. And so I would relay that message in my head. And it was like positive sometimes, like, yeah, it's lonely at the top. And then other times it was like, it felt hard and heavy.
Right. You're like, I don't know if I want to be at the top if it's this yeah. lonely, like if it's this isolating.
Yes, because I'm only 19. So we wanted our lives to be as normal as possible. And so I think that's why I'm so grounded with my family and all, because we never wanted it to take over because we've seen how that can happen. But again, I was just a kid. I was homeschooled. I didn't have much. It's like.
Well, as I'm listening to you talk about this too, it's like
yeah,
there's so much pressure that is
yeah.
put on young athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you are the star athlete at a young age, there's yeah. more pressure to like grow up and become an adult soon because everything's riding on you,
yes.
it feels like.
And you're right, under a microscope.
Like, yeah. And then you have yeah. the press looking at you and fans, and you're like, now I need to become media trained. And now yeah. I need to yeah. learn how to like know how to just handle myself again at 19 years old. And mm-hmm. something that I'm realizing you're saying, talking about how you had to bear a lot of this on your own.
Mm-hmm.
With all of your success, then there was behind the scenes so much
right.
fucking going on.
Yeah.
And in 2018,
yeah.
you spoke out about the abuse mm-hmm. that you endured from the USA Gymnastics physician.
Yeah.
I'm so curious, Simone, like, can you talk about your decision to open up about that?
The main reason I did that is because a lot of people follow me, a lot of people go on my platforms, and I've always been an open and honest book from the very beginning, and I've always decided I'm not going to let anything ever change me because this is who I am, so take it or leave it. But I've always been an open book. Like, I was talking to my friend the other day, and she was like, I met you in 3 minutes. We went from talking about this to, like, deep stuff. And it's just, like, a lot of people, when they meet me, they can feel that, but it's after that, I decided to speak out because I know it could help a lot of people. So if I could shine a light on whatever that is, then I'm going to do that. But I wanted to be in a good enough place and to have the proper help lined up before I spoke out because that stuff was so traumatizing and I truly don't understand how I did what I did under those circumstances and how I put on a face. But, you know, at some point, as an athlete, you were an athlete, so you understand. It's like we normalize a lot of stuff, but then we push off emotions. It's like we do so much.
It's this like you can create this like false narrative in your head of
yes.
what you should endure and what's normal. And
that's all you know. That's all we knew. So we thought it was normal because we're all homeschooled there together. Right. It's like.
Right. You're all going through the same thing.
Yeah. And so if we're talking to each other and if this is happening to you, this is happening to you. Okay.
Right.
Like, cool. It's normalized.
What we're talking about also is like there's so many different forms of abuse, but like the abuse of power.
Yeah.
Is. It's such a tricky situation and we see it so often. But yeah. Like we're having a conversation about one, someone that you were told to trust, mm-hmm. but also by an organization that was supposed to protect you and foster your career. And so there's so much, yes, abuse mentally, physically, emotionally. But like I'm curious because I think sometimes when people look at you, it's like Simone Biles, like the face of mental health and she's the best in this. But it's like on the real day to day, like mm-hmm. this shit is fucking awful to go through and they, people weren't with you on the day to day. Once you decided to speak out about this, like how did processing this trauma show up in your day to day life?
Well, at that point, I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety. And I kind of knew I was depressed, but I hid it so well because I train 34 hours a week. So what do I always do whenever I'm at home? I'm in my room laying down, resting. But I knew this resting was very different. Like it was hard to get out of bed. It was hard to do anything. It felt like everything felt heavy in the end of the world. And again, a lot of sleepless, crying nights. Like why me? Because it's just like, and then you kind of play victim. And then it seems like, again, nobody can relate to you. Nobody's listening. Nobody is. I trusted this person, this, that, the other. So it just felt very, I wouldn't even say dehumanizing, but it felt like I held a lot of the guilt that wasn't mine to hold.
The fucking worst.
Yes. And I think that was the hardest for me to process. Mm-hmm. And I learned through therapy, like, yes, this is not my guilt to hold, but to convince myself that, because it's easier said than done.
Totally.
But to convince myself that, it was really, really hard. And I think I'm still working on that in therapy. Like, it's gotten a lot better, and I feel comfortable, and now I can have conversations and stuff like that. But, yeah, I have good days. I have bad days. But I also know that that doesn't define me.
It does not define you at all. It's an experience you went through. I do think it's unfortunate how so few people understand, though, like, This is something that is a part of you for the rest of your life. It doesn't define you.
Yes.
But when people are like, okay, like it's never over.
Yes. And that's, I think as an athlete, that was the hardest thing for me to process too, because you know, if you get injured, you go to the doctor and they're like, okay, 3 to 6 months or 3 weeks or whatever. And this is like years. And I'm like, why do I not feel better? Like if a doctor could sit down and tell me, I'd be great. Cause I thought like, oh, 3 to 6 months, 3 to 6 weeks. It's like, we're always on timeline with injuries. So whenever it's a mental injury or a physical injury that you're going through like that with depression and anxiety, and nobody can give you a timeline, it feels like it's never ending. And I was like, I just don't understand. I should be fine by now.
And doesn't that bring up sometimes like, there's shame that comes with it. You're like, why the fuck is this not going
because
away?
It's like, I'm not going to want to be in 10 years talking about this and somebody's going to be like, God, here she goes again. But it's like.
But I do think you talking about it, Simone, and that's why I think it's really important how you said, this does not define you. But this is, it's also important to show people when people are like, that's so sad that happened to someone, and then they move on with their lives.
Yeah.
This is something that stays with people forever.
Yeah.
And so to neglect the conversation of like acting like it didn't happen, it did. And you are who you are, but it's a piece of you and it's a part of you. I also think that's such an interesting comparison of like, if you mess up your ankle, it's visible. You can feel it. You can't ignore it.
Yes.
With trauma, emotionally, you can shut that shit down and you can bury it so far.
And that's the thing we're so good at as athletes at doing that too. And my therapist is like, just take it out of the box, roll it out on the floor. Like, it's fine because we're so good at like depressing everything.
Yes.
So it's like, God. So for so long, it's worked until it didn't anymore. And that's what you saw at the Olympics, a big old spill. And I was like, to me, I couldn't understand why that happened either. Because I'm like, gymnastics. Like, what the heck is going on? Why is this happening? And then my therapist is like, well, we know why it happened. And I still have conversations with her to this day. And I'm like, hey, look, it's Olympic year. Did we figure out why that happened? And she's like, Simone, we figured out why this has happened. I was like, are we sure? Are we sure?
Really? Because it can't happen again.
Yes, but it's like, it wasn't just a mental injury that happened called the twisties. It's like compressing all of this shit for so many years, it just unfolded.
Right.
Like you can't compress trauma that much longer. Yeah. And I hate to be the person that blames it on something else, because I'd rather blame it on, like, I have a hangnail. Sorry, can't vault. Like, or whatever it is.
Right. You're like, I wish I could say, like,
yeah, like,
money.
Yes, and at that point, after I came out about it, they're like, she doesn't want to lose. And I was like, first of all, I almost broke my leg, but it's thankfully I didn't break my leg. And I called my agent, and I was like, this is a mental injury that they can't see. Do they want me to wear a helmet? I'm like, because they couldn't see it, so they couldn't relate to it. They couldn't grasp it. It's not something that I could tell them so that they could feel. Like, if I broke my ankle, they'd be like, should I broke my ankle before too? Like, I know how that feels. Of course you can't vault. But for a mental injury, nobody could understand it. So there were so many narratives thrown around, so many different excuses that were pushed onto me. And I think the shittiest part of all at the Olympics, I have very good, like, senses, and I knew something was going to go wrong. I couldn't pinpoint what it was or when it was going to happen, but I just had this feeling deep down, this is not going to go the way I want it to, and I don't know why, but I have this deep, deep feeling like something's going
to
happen.
To people that, I mean, aren't familiar, yes, yeah. You went to the Tokyo Olympics, and yeah. I'm curious, like, so you're saying you kind of knew, like, when do you think you knew? Like, where were you mentally going into the Tokyo Olympics?
I don't know, but I could feel something, and I felt myself, besides all the pressure, because we deal with that as elite athletes, we have different tactics about how we're going to carry ourselves and how we're going to do whatever so that we can still compete to the best of our ability, you know? But there was something that I could feel that was going to be out of my control, and I didn't know when it was going to happen or what was going to happen, but I was like, I felt strange, but I'm not going to tell anybody on the team that. I'm a veteran. It's everyone's first times at the Olympics. Like, they're looking up to me, and I'm guiding them, taking them through the route. But, you know, nothing about that Olympics was normal anyways. We're having a pandemic. The whole world is shut down. Like, nothing about the Olympic Games was normal, and I feel for those athletes that might not ever be able to go to another Olympic Games, because that is not what the Olympics is about.
Yeah.
In 2016, it was so much fun. The camaraderie, the team spirit, everybody's rooting for everybody. I feel like that's world peace. Time stops. Doesn't matter what color you are, what religion you are, what you support, what you don't support. Everybody comes together to support their athletes and their country. So it was just very strange, but I could feel something. Like, the wires weren't connected. Like, the red, the yellow,
something was off. Mm-hmm. And in training up to Tokyo, did you feel that too?
A little bit, but we had been training so hard, and we were prepared. Like, we were so prepared. I've never been so prepared for an event in my life. I mean, obviously besides 2016, but this felt like a different kind of prepared. And it felt a little bit more calm.
Isn't that so crazy as I'm listening to you? Like, you're like, I'm on the plane ride to Tokyo,
yeah.
And I knew. Like, I knew
just, like,
something.
Just, like, was weird.
And you didn't know when.
Yeah.
But, like, that's, again, like, the body just telling you, like, something ain't right.
Yeah.
Simone, we're not good. And
yeah,
you're like,
to me,
push it down. We are fine.
And to me, I was like, it's fine. Take your medicine. And some of the days, we're asking my doctor, I'm going to take two of my pills. I never take two of my pills, but I was like, something's coming up. It feels like I don't know what it is, but, like, I cannot control this. It is out of my control. So we're going to control what we can control. Let's take your medicine. Maybe try 20 milligrams. Maybe try this. And it was just like, it was the weirdest experience. And whenever I look back at it, it doesn't seem real life, which maybe is a good thing.
Right. You're like, it's kind of like.
It's a good thing till everybody reminds me.
No, as I'm sitting here being like, so let's talk about the team final in Tokyo.
Yeah.
I'm curious. We know what happened. Mm-hmm. You get lost in the air during your vault and everyone was shocked. But I'm curious, like, take me to the moment literally when you land on the mat. What is going through your mind?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Some things work so well. It's basically magic. Like my favorite highlighters that I'm like, wow, how did you all of a sudden make me look glowing? And you know what else really works, Daddy Gang? Shopify. It is a global commerce platform that helps you sell. I've seen a big difference in my online merch sales. They are especially good at turning browsers into buyers. I can see someone that's been on the site but didn't check out, or someone that checked out and then is revisiting the site. Like, if you want to grow your business, Daddy Gang, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/unwell, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/unwell.
Take me to the moment literally when you land on the mat. What is going through your mind?
Okay, I'll start from the back of the runway when we're standing there.
Let's go back to the runway.
So in the back, like, we already knew my gymnastics was kind of janky. Like, in training, I was having twisties already. But I'm trying to push past that. And I would literally tell my teammates, like, I'm fighting demons. I'm fighting demons right now, but I'm going to do it for you guys. Because, like, the cords were not connected. So I literally felt like I was fighting my body and my mind to do these tricks. So we're trying to do some different things in the back. And I'm like, okay, I can't do a full and off beam. Can I please go back to my double-double, which is way harder. But I know if I twist more, it's better for me. So then we go to vault. Vault is feeling a little bit weird in the air. And you can see it. Like, the girls, we ended on floor because we started on vault out there. So we end on floor. I go to do my first pass. And you can see in the air, like, you can ask the girls. It's not like my first pass is a triple-double. And usually when you do it, you see my regular videos. You see one, you see two, you see three. This one, it looks like I'm going like this in the air. And it doesn't feel comfortable. I have no idea where I am. But I'm twisting, like, praying, land on my feet. And they're like, that looks jacked up. You can tell. All of the gymnasts in there from all of the countries are like, that's jacked up. That looks jacked up. It looks like she's never done this a day in her life. But they know it's a twisty. So people are kind of trying not to watch. We get out there and vault, and I was like, okay, it's fine. I warmed up everything. Like, it wasn't good, but I did it. And so we get that out there on vault, and we have a one-touch warm-up. Go over the table, do a 1.5. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what was that? And so I'm like, it's fine. And everybody's freaking out. I don't have another touch, so I have to go stand there until it's my turn to salute and go. I don't have another touch. So the girls
are
like,
can you explain that to people that have no idea what gymnastics? Like, they're like, what?
Yes,
what do
gymnastics,
you mean?
Once we go out there, we usually have a one-touch vault. And it is what it is. It's to warm up. You're usually sitting in the back for 40, 45 minutes. Come out. You get one turn to take to warm up your vault to perfection. And then you sit there and wait till it's your turn to salute. And, hey, I'm at the Olympics. You know, that's your debut before, you know.
Yes.
And so we go out there. And I do the 1.5. And my teammates are shook. They're like, are you okay? Are you okay? And I'm trying to convince myself I'm okay. So I don't need you asking me if I'm okay.
Right.
Because I'm okay. Listen, I'm okay.
We're great.
Like, everything is not okay. Like,
yeah.
Literally. And so they're like, you're fine. And I was like, I don't know why I did that. I don't know why. And I knew once I got up there, I'm chalking up. We can't put Jordan in yet. I have to go. I have to put up a score. No matter what it is over the table, I have to put up a score. So I'm chalking up, and you can see if you watch the video, I'm like, because I have no idea what I'm going to do when I hit that table. And so in my head, I'm standing there, and I'm like, I'll just do the double pike, which I haven't warmed up in like 4 days. And I'm like, if I do a double pike, over-rotate it, it's fine. And then I was like, they put up a score for a 2.5, so I have to do a 2.5. And I'm thinking, if I do a double back, that's so dangerous. My coach will kill me. My team will never forgive. And I saluted, and I was like, praying to God. Because I knew I was going to do a vault, but I didn't know what I was going to do. And I knew I was going to try to do a 2.5, but I didn't know how many twists I was going to make. And I just, because I couldn't twist anymore. It's just like your body, your brain opens up, have no idea where you are. So I opened, landed like that. And as soon as I land, I kind of grin and I'm like, shit. And I salute and I want to run. If I could have gotten a plane and flown home, I would have done it. But I just, as soon as I landed, I was like, oh, America hates me. The world is going to hate me. And I can only see what they're saying on Twitter right now. That was my first thought.
Simone.
I was like, holy shit. What are they going to say about me? Because usually if you go to the Olympics and you flop or whatever it is, everybody on their couch eating those little chips.
Right. It's like you let the country down.
Oh, I thought I was going to be banned from America. Because that's what they tell you. Don't come back. If it's not gold, gold or bust, don't come back. And I was like, I don't. Thanks.
Can we just pause also? Like, you landing and the first thing that you're thinking should have been, thank God I'm alive. Because you can severely hurt yourself in those moments. Yes. And you, understandably, because this is such an athlete thing, it's like, praise everyone, get everything for everyone, and just like sacrifice my body at all costs. And you land on the mat and you're thinking, what is Twitter saying?
Yeah. I was like, no, I'm going to be one of those videos, flops at the Olympics. Like, this is horrible. And I knew I couldn't recover. And I know how long the twisties takes to get over. And I know it's not overnight.
Can you explain also to people that aren't familiar, what is the twisties?
Okay. If I had to explain it in gymnastics terms, it still might not make sense. But it's basically like your mind and your body is at a disconnect. Your body is going to try to do something. And your mind is going to be like, no, you're not doing this work. You're going to open out. You're going to do this. But it's the same as if, like, the best way I could describe it is every day you drive a car. If one day you woke up and you had no idea how to drive a car, your legs are going crazy, you have no control over your body, that's kind of how it feels like. You've been doing something for so long and you now no longer have control.
Terrifying.
And it's terrifying because we're in a car without any protection. I am my car. Like, so I would explain it as like the yips in golf or baseball or whatever it is. I'm not familiar with other sports, so if I'm wrong, correct me. But that's kind of how it feels like.
So immediately when you get off the mat, what do you do?
I go to tell my coach, and I said, I'm done. I'm not doing anymore. Because if I survive that, I don't know how much else I can survive. Like, I always say I'm a cat with 9 lives, but I think that was my 9th. I'm done. And she's like, are you sure? And I was like, yes, Jordan, gear up. You're in. You're doing the rest of the meet. I'm not. Like, I can't do it.
And are you, like, internally freaking out, but you're coming off just,
internally,
like –
internally, but I didn't want to freak out in front of the girls.
Got it.
So I kept, like, as composed as I could have, and I was like, you guys got this. And then they just went – we went to the back just to get evaluated, like, mentally and physically. But we also didn't want to – I didn't want to scare the girls, so I was like, can we please go? And there's cameras. All the cameras rush over, and I was just like – because I know what happened, but I also don't know what happened and why it happened. So we just went in the back. The girls are gearing up for bars. I come back out, and I was like, you guys got this. You'll be fine. Trust me. And they were like, no, we can't do this out without you. We're not going to win anymore. Da, da, da. They're freaking out because they also know what Twitter's going to say if U.S. doesn't win. And I was like, don't worry about it. You guys are here because you're the best in the world, and you will be. Like, go out there and do your job. But I think it was really hard on them because mentally they lost – their best player, the veteran, like, I think it was really hard on them. So that's something that I'll never forgive myself for that whole entire experience, because I wish I could have been in there with them in a way that I was supposed to, physically, putting up team scores, putting them. But after that, I became their loudest and best cheerleader. But I just wish it would have been contributing the way that it was supposed to happen.
I think that's so hard. When you're an athlete, you understand that moment where you're like, you logically know there was nothing else you could have done.
Nothing.
But
nothing.
Your brain is illogical when you're in those moments,
of course,
with your teammates, where you're like, I will literally like die for this team
and
right
that's
now.
What I was – that's what I was doing. That's what I was putting myself through in the back. And that's why I don't know how I made it that far through warm-ups, through competing. I don't know how I landed on my feet. And I think that's what people don't realize is like, that's not the vault that I was supposed to compete. I had a whole nother full twist that I was supposed to compete. So they're like, she didn't want to lose. And I was like, no, 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 no. I'm not like, my pride is not that big. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So at that point, it's like, you know what? I need to take care of myself and I need to do what's right for my team. And yeah, I need to let my pride not get in the way and push through this just to compete at the Olympics again. I need to go sit down, take a rest, see what's wrong mentally, and let's figure it out. But let's still give my team a chance of medal contention. Because again, what people also don't realize is if I got hurt on that vault, they couldn't replace me. So if I got hurt, since I'm on every event, it's two up, two count. We would have never won a medal. But since what happened, happened, we went to the back. At that point, they could rule it as a mental injury and all of that stuff and physical. We got to put Jordan in. People don't know that.
What happened in the back? Did you just try to, like, what happened?
Doctors came over. I had to talk to my family because they were watching the Olympics and they see me get whisked to the back. So they thought I was hurt. And I'm like,
poor parents.
Yeah, I'm hurt. My heart is broken. Like, everything hurts, but my knees are fine. I'm like, my brain hurts, like, everything. So I called my family, and it's so funny because my sister was sleeping.
No.
Like, bitch, I'm at the Olympics. Why are you sleeping? But there's a time change, so I get it. But everybody's in up in the house cheering for me, Simone gear on, and my sister's like, I think I'll take a nap.
I think I'll sit this one out. Simone's got it. So like, they wake her up?
No. She heard the phone ring because I called the home phone. And she said she was sleeping and she felt something was wrong. She ran to the kitchen and said, I'll answer it. And saw my name on it.
Oh, that's freaky.
Freaky. And she answered and she said, hello. And as soon as I heard her voice, I lost it.
You're crying.
I was like, I'm out. I'm done. Like, and she was like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah. Can you hand the phone to mom? Like,
you're like, mom.
Yeah, like, come pick me up. I'm scared.
Literally, mom, come pick me up. I'm scared. I'm in Tokyo. Yeah. And you're back in the United States. What did your mom say?
She was like, are you okay? Because that was her main concern. She thought I got hurt.
Of course.
And at that point, like, yeah, I wish my toe was sticking on the side of my foot or my knees were cracked or something, because that would have been easier to explain.
It's also just like, as an athlete, you're so right. It's like the feeling of trying, we're supposed to be the toughest.
Yeah.
We're like, you're invincible. Yeah. What do you mean? We can't see the injury, so you're fine.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, sorry I came here. My brain just decided to have a malfunction and break.
Yeah. How do you describe that to people? How do you tweet that one to the world?
That's what I'm saying. But then whenever I really talked about it, and there were actually a lot of people that understood and we got a lot of positive feedback, and that's why I was like, you know what? You're not going to put me at the forefront of mental health, but again, if I can be a voice, let's go through this journey together, because I know, unfortunately, a lot of us are struggling, but let's walk this journey together and let's go get healthy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What are your parents like on that call? Your mom's checking if you're okay. Yeah. What is your dad like in those moments?
My dad is always so calm and collected, it seems.
Yeah.
So he was probably like, oh, is she okay? But probably not even that concerned. He was probably like, is she okay? Okay. Okay. Like, I think that's just what he was doing. My mom was like a mess. I could hear her crying and breaking down, and that's what broke me too. It's because also I have so many people who have helped me get to where I was.
Yep.
And I felt like I didn't just let down myself. I let down that team that was there. I let down America. I let down my trainers. There are so many people that helped me get there. And that's why every time I get to compete for Team USA or I'm on top of that podium, I'm so grateful. And that medal's not just for me. It's for everybody that has helped me get there. So it's like, at that point, it was really heavy. Because I was like, I couldn't even look at Laurent. Like, Cecile helped me so much, but I couldn't look at Laurent.
Why?
I felt like I failed him. And I've never said that out loud, so it's like, and they've helped me get to that point because I never thought I was going to do gymnastics again. And so I felt like I let down Laurent.
Now having met him, mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah.
Like, he has such a incredibly high standard for you in the best way. And he's so, like, fierce and loyal, but
he thinks he tries not to let anything get to him. And I knew that got to him.
You ended up participating in the individual beam competition and won a bronze medal, flex. How did you know you were okay to compete?
I changed my routine because I didn't have to twist. Flipping wasn't necessarily the problem. It was flipping and twisting. And so one of the gyms there let me go train there. And I have, like, videos from that, too. And so they let me change my dismount. And I've done a full in for, like, 7 years or 8 years. I hadn't done a double pike in, like, that long. So going back and trying to control that, and I kept over-rotating it, was insane. I was so scared because my dismount is typically harder. And so I was like, okay, I can still do beam if we change my dismount. And we were able to change it. And at that point, I didn't think I was going to medal. I was like, I just want to go out there, compete, because this is what I came here to do.
But how do you even, like, mentally get yourself together to, like, after that moment with vault? Like,
it was, like, 4 days later, thank God.
You could just, like, chill.
Because I pulled out of every final. But every time I pulled out of a final, I felt like it was another knife. Like, so I got to do beam, and I was really excited. And then, of course, a lot of people hated that. Oh, of course she's going to do it for herself. And I was like, you don't see me twisting, do you? Still not twisting. But, yeah, once the score came up, I was like, oh, thank God. Like, made a beam routine. And then we saw that I was going to medal, and I hit Cecile, and I said, what? I'm going to – a bronze? And after Rio, I got a bronze on beam, and I was shunned. And people were like, throw that medal away. You should have got a gold because I did mess up. But there's no telling what the medal would have been, but I did mess up, so I ended up with a bronze. And so I was scarred from having a bronze medal because I never really talked about my bronze because people made me so ashamed of it in Rio. And so whenever I got that bronze, you couldn't tell me that it was bronze. It felt like a gold to me.
Right, you're like, I'm just happy I got a medal.
Yes.
I'm happy I got back
competed.
Out there. For people to be like, don't come home with that bronze. It's like, sorry, do you know how to do a cartwheel?
That's what I'm saying. Like,
sorry, who are you to say don't come home with a bronze?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I'll walk my ass back into America and happily raise it around. Right. I'll take a bronze.
Yeah, so it's just like from one spectrum to the other, from having a real bronze to a Tokyo bronze, it's like polar opposites. Like I'm swinging that thing around. People are like, you know that's a bronze? I'm like,
we got it. Let's go.
Yeah, like you couldn't tell me that it was a bronze.
Because you got it. You,
yeah.
Like, God bless. Yeah. Okay, take me to the plane ride. I'm picturing you're like getting through these Olympics at this point. You get bronze. You're like, time to go back home. That's a long ass plane ride.
Yeah, I was mentally, physically exhausted, drained. I have nothing left and I can't put on a face anymore. Like I physically could not wait to land in Houston and they made us go to New York to do like the Today Show or... And so I got my hair and makeup done, whatever. Still putting on a great face because I'm like, all I want to do is hold my mom and cry. I want my mom. Like, I just want my mom.
And they're like, just for today, so sweetie, smile.
Yes.
Like-
And so as soon as we landed in Houston, again, there was at the gate so many cameras, so I still had to put on a face. I couldn't break down. But I hugged my mom and I just like felt comforted. But I couldn't break down until we got home. And guess what? When I got home, they threw a parade. And they were like, get ready, Simone. We have a parade through the neighborhood. Like, get your convertible, smile and wave. I just wanted to have a breakdown, and I didn't want to have it. This mental breakdown, it was waiting.
No, it is sitting in your chest. You're like, when can I sob? When can I sit in my bed for 48 hours and not leave and just sob?
Yeah.
And you had to do a parade.
Yeah, a parade.
At that point, you're like,
I just wanted to cry.
Will the tears even come at this point? I've been holding them in.
I just wanted to cry and be like, this was the shittiest thing ever. I don't know why it happened. I just wanted to soak in my feelings and to be by myself. And I didn't want anybody to tell me that it was okay anymore. Because I'm tired of everybody telling me it's okay. It's okay to you. It's not okay to me. What happened was not okay. Like, so that was that.
So when did you break down?
Probably when I had to unpack that suitcase. And then I went on tour. And I was hosting my own tour across America, Gold Over America, which was absolutely amazing. The fans, the kids, beautiful. We put together an amazing production. But, like, even before some of those shows, I had therapy. Mm-hmm. I can't recall what time our show started, but say it started at 7. I would be on therapy from, like, 4:30 to 6. And then I would give myself an hour to get ready And some days Jordan would come in my room because I had my own room. I'd be bawling my eyes out trying to put on my makeup because I'm talking to my therapist about the Olympic experience. Put on my face. Woo! Hi, Gold Over America. Love to see you. Like crazy.
It's like.
Yeah. But it was fun. And I will cherish every stop and every show that we got to put on.
Totally.
But it was just like behind the scenes, just nobody knew.
Well, no. And that's what I appreciate you sharing that because yeah. it doesn't take away from you had an amazing experience yeah. with those people. But it's like, again, shows the level of strength mm-hmm. you have of like, you know, Simone Biles, the public yeah. person and what she needs yeah. to do to show up. But like, were you, and I don't want you to share what you're comfortable because yeah. therapy is sacred. But like, in those sessions, mm. are you going beat by beat or are yeah. you just talking about the overall feeling and experience?
For me, since, it was a new therapist.
Is that good or bad timing? I'm like.
It was a new therapist and every time I'm with a new therapist, it feels a little bit uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So I like to start by saying like, hey, I'm like an onion. Let's peel the layers. Like I'm an open book anywhere else, but with trauma, it has to be by layers because, listen, I still have to put on face. I still have to go do these shows. I don't, you know. So it was kind of layers by layers. But, like, the compartmentalizing that we do as an athlete and just as a human, I know a lot of us do it, was insane, and I don't know how I got through it. But, honestly, I think the tour helped me get out there and realize there's more to life than gymnastics. And I honestly thought – since I didn't compete at the Olympics in the way that I was supposed mm-hmm. to and that we didn't win gold, I thought nobody was going to show up to my tour stops. And night after night, it kind of filled my cup up because all of these girls and the fans came out. And I remember after a show, sometimes we get to see our family, but since COVID, it wasn't too much family. Mm-hmm. But my family and some of the producers were at a show. And we were in the back. We were eating dinner after the show. And I broke down crying. And I was like, I cannot believe people are still showing up. Why are they showing up? We didn't win. And that's when I realized, like, holy crap.
It's not about that.
Yeah. But I always thought it was because that was ingrained in my head. And that's what everybody told me.
That's heavy.
Yeah, it was crazy. I've learned so much about myself in such different Olympic experiences. That now having another Olympic year in a cycle, like it's traumatizing in a way to walk into. But I feel like at this point, nothing can break me. It's like yeah. I've just been through so much trauma, so much healing. I'm actually excited to see what happens
yeah.
after this.
I was going to say like in a strange way, because mm-hmm. I was thinking about, I'm actually like, I feel like I can visualize oddly like that scene of you opening that suitcase.
Yeah.
And just like sitting there with it in front of you of like,
yeah.
And the emotions and everything mm. you're feeling from what you just tried to run away from kind of
yes.
is sitting there going now to this new phase. It's a little traumatizing. You're right. To be like, am I going to do that again?
Yeah.
I'm going to
put myself through this.
Right.
Yeah.
When you were home, when was the first time you tried the vaults again? Like, did you go immediately into the gym? What was the situation?
That's what I wanted to do. But since we had tour, there was no way for me to really get into a gym and train like that. But I was so traumatized. So after tour, I kind of put it under the rug. That's for another time. I would go into the gym and train, like play around. I wouldn't say train. I would go into the gym, go see the girls, and I would just go jump on the trampoline and do back flips, back tugs. Like people call it back flips. That's why I'm saying back flips.
Yep.
But I would go do back tugs, and even that felt kind of weird because mm-hmm. I'm like, whoa. But I hadn't done that in a year because I took off a year or more. And every time I went to the gym, it was kind of traumatizing. And so every time I'd flip, I just like flashbacks to Tokyo. Oh, I'm going to get lost. And Laurent would always come over and he's like, okay, go into the pit. Let's do a full. And I'm like, I'm here to see the girls. I just wanted to jump on the tramp.
You're like, I'm just like here to jump on the trampoline.
Yeah.
Like, calm down.
He would make me twist and go back to the basics. And I wasn't even training. I literally would just come visit. And he didn't want me to have that feeling because And before that, I would watch Gymnastics on TV, and the girls would be twisting, and I'd be, like, cringing. I'd be like, oh, my God, I'm going to throw up. I can't. Because I can't picture myself doing it because I took so much off.
What was the lowest point of the entire Tokyo aftermath and experience?
I would say it wasn't even in Tokyo, unfortunately. I think it's whenever I decided to come back and train and getting over those demons. Because there were so many days I would come back in the gym and it was like one step forward, five steps back. One step forward, five steps back. Because as soon as I got lost, one time, get lost, pack my bags, I'm out of there. Why am I putting myself through this? Hell no. So I would literally like, I left so many times. It was frustrating for both me and Laurent because he didn't fully understand the twisties. And for a lot of the time as gymnasts, we know it happens, but it's very unspoken of. And whenever it happens, you pretend it doesn't happen.
Huh. Why is that?
It's not a good feeling. It's dangerous. It's like horrible. It's scary.
But you don't want to speak up because then you're like, I don't want to be out.
Yeah. And then the other girls will look at you and they feel like once you get lost, it's going to happen to them.
Got it.
So it feels contagious.
Interesting.
So whenever they were looking at me and doing it, it just like, it's so weird. And so we had to go back to the basics. And honestly, like the whole year, whenever Laurent, last year, he told me I was competing, I was like, how can I compete? I'm not over the twisties yet. Because every time I went to bars or beam or floor, I was praying that I did the amount of twist I was supposed to. Mm. Like I was so traumatized for this experience that I'm just now feeling better. And even walking into the gym, some days I feel like I'm going to get lost. Because I know why it happened, but like, I'm like, I hope that's the reason.
Right.
So, I'm just now feeling comfortable without, yeah. So it's crazy because like, I went through world championships, everybody's like, she's back. And like, if we would have had one more day of world championships, I think just mentally from convincing myself that I can do it so many times, mm-hmm. and you're fine, twisting, I think I would have just broke down and been like, I just can't, like, mentally, I couldn't do it anymore. Not physically. I think physically I would have been able to do it. But if there were one more day of Worlds, I wouldn't have done it.
Because I think what people, I hope, understand is, like, there's this mental, taxing aspect of, like, yes. when you fail at something, you can't unsee it.
Exactly.
And you can't unfeel it. So you're trying to remove yourself and you're trying to push it as far away as possible.
Yeah.
But your brain has experienced it once, so you need to be so mentally strong
yes.
to lock that so far in the corner.
Yes.
But it's hard.
Yeah.
So when did you approach your coaches and say, I want to come back?
It was kind of funny because the conversation didn't go how I thought it was going to go.
Oh, okay.
And so I think I requested a meeting or whatever with Cecile and Laurent, and we ended up at their house and brought my husband, you know, my little blankie. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I want to go back to the Olympics. I want to do this. And they're sitting across the table, and they look at me, and they're like, no. And I was like, I want to go to the Olympics. Like, I want to go back to the Olympics. Let's do this.
Wait, like, scream for me?
Yes. And they were like, no. And I was like, what's happening? I'm like, what was going on? And they were like, no, you've set expectations for yourself for so long. Let's just go back in the gym, get in shape, and see what happens. And I was like, so we're not going to the Olympics. We're not training for the Olympics.
You're like, we ain't going to Paris?
Yes.
Like, what do you mean?
And so that was really weird to me because I thought they were going to be on board. Like, yes, we have the process laid out. Da-da-da-da.
Let's go.
And they just said no. And I was like, do I get new coaches? Do I, like, what's going to happen? And I was like, oh, you're right. And he was like, let's not just think about the Olympics right now. Let's think about maybe getting your skills back. Twisting comfortably again, doing this. And I was like, oh those things?
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah.
But then can we go to the Olympics?
Yes. And that's kind of how we started it. And then I didn't think I was competing at Classics last year. And he was like, yeah, you're competing. Here's your Leos. Here's this. Here's that. I was like, what? That we weren't going to the Olympics.
So I can officially ask, and you can confirm, like, the goal is to go to Paris.
if all goes well, I'm training. Yeah.
The goal is to go to Paris.
Yes.
So if you're going to Paris, how are you approaching the games differently compared mm-hmm. to previous years?
I think just working on my mind and my body more than I have, mm-hmm. or continuing to work on my body and my mind, just like I have the past year and a half, and it's worked, and sort of just stay on top of that. It's exhausting, but like I have to do it. It's working. I didn't think therapy was going to work, and it's working, so.
Therapy is the most incredible thing that I have always said to people, like, you yes. do, though, need to get into it when you're ready.
Yes.
It's like so many people can tell you to go, and if your body and brain mm-hmm. is not ready to go, it's not even going to yeah. penetrate. You're going to be like, I don't feel shit.
And you're not going to open up. You're not going to talk. You're not going to be vulnerable. You're not going to let those demons out, so it worked out for the better.
I think I saw an interview of you where you were like, which I kind of loved, you were like, people ask you your goals if you're, you know, for the Olympics. And you're like, I'm not sharing my goals
yeah.
because I'm so sick of people then like shoving them in my face if I don't
exactly.
hit it. Yeah. And I think that's good for you
yes,
to set
no,
boundaries with press. Can I ask though, like a personal, like not having to do with gymnastics, a personal goal mentally for you that you're going to carry through?
I would say to keep up with my therapy, even on those hard days, because I have dodged a couple of those sessions.
Oh, yeah. You're like, sorry, I'm like a little busy. That's so relatable. You're like.
And she knows I have my days off, so I do it the same day every time. And she's like, Simone, are you there? And I was like, no.
Sorry, I'm not here. That's the worst when your therapist calls you out. And it's like, why? I know you're free. And you're like, no, I'm not. And they're like, and those are the ones that they always get mad at you because they're like, those are the sessions you need the most.
That's what she tells me. But you know, my phone's on. Do not disturb.
You're like, I can't hear you.
I'm like, I messed up. I'm like, but I feel so guilty and so ashamed.
I do too. When I ghost my therapist, is there anything more toxic than ghosting your therapist? You're literally
yes.
like, this is like the most toxic because it's the healthiest relationship.
Thank
you're
you.
In, but like so toxic.
So bad.
Sometimes you can't.
We need a break.
Sometimes I don't want to talk my feelings too much.
And sometimes it's like exhausting. I just feel like a record on repeat. And again, it goes back to like, I feel like I should be healed by now.
Mm-hmm.
Now
mm-hmm.
you're shoving this down my throat.
I hope you, and I know this to anyone mm-hmm. going through mental health situations yeah. or survivors, whatever it is, like it is not on you to
Absolutely.
Speed up the process
yeah.
of recovery from trauma mm-hmm. that was not your fault.
Yes.
And so it's hard to, again, as athletes,
yeah.
you're trained to get over things so quickly, but this is one thing you have to like rewire your brain to
yes.
be like, it's okay
yes.
to feel this and don't shove it away.
Yeah.
Call your therapist.
Yeah.
Talk it through.
No, 100%. And I agree. And I think I've learned that with my therapy over the years. So I am very grateful that I'm in therapy and thankful for the resources we have, because before this, like, no athlete was very outspoken about doing therapy or this, that, the other, or even just getting help. So we are in a very fortunate situation that we're able to do that and we're allowed to be vulnerable with our fans and with our community. So I guess I just want to say thank you to them too, because without them, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. So,
okay, this is still Call Her Daddy. So I want to talk about your husband. You're married to an NFL player, Jonathan Owens.
Yes.
You're married to an NFL player, Jonathan Owens.
Yes.
You met on Raya. Which first I just want to say, like, God bless you, because I had no luck on Raya. Okay, girl, like, Raya was just doing nothing for me, but, like, DJs in Australia.
Yeah.
So good for you.
You didn't have...
I had no luck.
I could have put your set... I could have changed your
Thank
settings.
Thank you. Okay, well...
your settings were off.
Were they?
Athletes, check. 50 to 100 miles, check.
Listen, I had enough of my days with athletes, okay? Simone, I had to move on. What made his profile stand out?
I think, first of all, boys are so different from girls because, like, we're picking the cutest backgrounds,
totally.
The most aesthetically looking pictures. Like, and I wanted him to see, I didn't want to really show that I was a gymnast. So I didn't want to put, like, a gymnastic-y picture in there unless he had to click on my Instagram and then see I was a gymnast. Uh-huh. So I didn't want them that to be the first impression. So I was like, okay, face, not that much makeup, this, that, the other. But what stood out on his profile was just like, he seemed so charismatic. Mm. He had these little dimples, you know, the light eyes. And I was like, oh, he's so cute. And I think he had his bulldog on there. And I was like, he has a dog. This is so cute.
That's how, I mean, even note to men listening, even if you don't own a dog, take a picture with the dog and put it on your profile because it won't work.
To me, if he had a dog, that meant he was responsible.
I love that you think that is the first thing. I mean, I'm like, oh, he's so cute. Is that him laughing back there? Someone's laughing.
But listen, I went to his profile and I didn't know it was his nephew. And I was like, he has a kid.
Oh, no. You thought he had a kid?
I thought he had a kid. But then, you know, my soccer skills. I'm
30 seconds. You figure it out.
Figured it out. So it was okay.
When did you start to realize he was the one?
You.
I know.
Actually, and this is so cliche because everybody says this, but like the first time I met him, I came home from like our little date and stuff and my friends were at my house and I was like, I'm going to marry him. Like, who says that? I don't know why I said that. I don't know what it is, but I just felt something. It would just like felt
what?
Different.
Like the energy or?
The energy, how well we got along. And like, it was a COVID relationship. It was like March of 2020, whenever I went over, I had to go to his apartment to meet him. It wasn't in a public setting, and we knew it didn't want to be public because we're both like public figures. They just take pictures, whatever. But to go to his apartment, I was like,
right, like
for a first date. But we had no other choice. Everything was really shutting down in our city. Like that week, everything was starting to shut down. And so for me, I was like, let's just do a play date with the bulldogs. And he was like, because I have a bulldog too. And he was like, well, no, because then we'll be distracted by the dogs. And for me, I kind of sometimes like distractions that's away from me. So that like, if it's awkward, I'm like, oh, my dog, look at her.
The dog is sitting on the floor.
Yeah. Literally. So he was like, no, not for the first date. Then we'll introduce them. Like, and I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, cute.
But then I walked in and his dog was so excited. He peed all over the floor.
That's
and
when
I was
you
like,
know.
I was like, maybe girls aren't here very often.
Great sign.
He's never seen a girl. The dog has never met a girl.
Context clue. Simone, you're genius. You're like, never seen a woman.
Never.
Even the delusion. You're like, they've never seen
the
a woman.
Delusion.
Like, the delusion.
Yeah.
What is married life like?
To me, I mean, God, we were together the whole entire time. And then as soon as we get married, Green Bay's like, hey, we want to sign him. So we went from our wedding, dropped our bags, flew out the next morning, signed a Green Bay, and they were like, see you Monday, Jonathan. So as soon as we got married, it was long distance. So it was very different. Now he's back home. Now we're getting back into the groove of things. Because we're both on our schedules. We're both athletes. And I think that's what is so nice about our relationship is, like, we get to focus on our sports, mm-hmm. respectively, and then we get to focus on each other. Mm-hmm. But it's no different. We're still dating, you know?
Yeah.
We're about to be 4 years in. So yeah, married life is no different.
Okay, Jonathan, if you're listening, I don't even know if he's in this house yet.
I think he is.
We have to talk about the viral moment.
Yeah.
Like, we have to
do it. I have to.
Jonathan's viral interview where he said he had no idea who you were and the internet went insane. What was your reaction when you heard the interview and everything?
I was in the room. I was sitting on the chair. You just couldn't see me on the videos. I was there for the whole entire video.
And you were feeling great.
I was feeling great. I was like, my man just killed that.
And I was like, stop.
And I'm so excited. And like, they even panned over to me with that viral moment. And I just like roll my eyes and laugh because like,
right.
But the funny thing is whenever I met Jonathan, we were texting that week. And I, at that point, I'm like, okay, I don't have time to waste. So if we're going to meet, because if it goes over a week, you're not meeting. Like, forget this, you know.
Yeah.
And so we met that week. But whenever I would text him, anything I text him, he would say, I can do that. I can do that. So he could do everything. He was a comedian. He was a dog trainer. He was the best cook out there. He was the fastest runner. He could do everything. And that cracked me up about him. So I couldn't wait to meet him to be like, you're not funny. You're not a good cook.
You're not shit.
Yeah, literally. So I just thought that was funny because, and I thought that was cute that he thought he was good at everything because I'm like, I'm good at gymnastics. Let me show you. I'm good at everything. And so whenever we did that, he did that interview, I thought everything was okay.
I'm dying.
And then I go on Twitter and everybody's like, divorce this man. He's mean. And I'm like, he's the sweetest. He praises the ground that I walk on. Like, truly, I've never met a man like him. He still opens my doors. And I'm not saying that to be like, he still opens my doors, because that's to be expected of men. But like, he truly goes out of his way to do anything for me. Today, I was like, babe, I'm at the gym and I forgot my camera. Can you bring it? And I meant to bring it to this house. He brought it to the gym.
No,
like, he's just so sweet.
Right. He's just doing things like you feel loved and you feel supported. And
yeah, so I didn't think anything of that interview. And he never said I wasn't a catch. He said he was a catch. Because he is. I've never met a man like him. A lot of people that meet him are like, oh my gosh, like, I want a man like that, like Jonathan. Like, a lot of the girls at the gym, they love him. He's so nice to them. He supports them. He's so sweet. One of the girls at the gym, she's like my little sister, and we had gone to, I think we were at camp, and I always drive her to camp, so she drops her car off at my house, and she parks it in the driveway. He got her windows tinted. He was like, you can't be fishbowling out here, and got her windows tinted. Like, he's the sweetest.
Like, he's thinking of the little things.
Yes.
I think what's crazy is, first of all, just as we know, the internet, like, you never know what's going to go viral.
And they'll take it and run, and that's exactly what they did.
Why do you think people got so upset?
Because first of all, that interview had nothing to do with me. It was all for him. So I think they were mad that he didn't include me in the interview. But he has to have his moments, too, and I let him have it. Whenever I go to football games, like, sometimes I get field passes, but I'm not like, hey, look at me, Simone Biles is here. I just want to see my man in that uniform. Give me a little kiss. Good luck out there. It's like, this is his moment. That's his interview. What was I supposed to interrupt that interview and be like, hey, da-da-da-da-da.
Right, like, you're like, I actually like that you're like, sometimes I'm like, I want to have my wag moment on the field where I'm just like, I'm not Simone Biles, the Olympian. I'm just Simone Biles, like, and that's my boo on the field.
Yes, and I love to support him. So I think that they were mad that whenever they said he, and by the way, like, he said it, but Brian Clark, like, said it so many times, like, yeah, so you're saying, so it was kind of hyped up, you know, boys, whatever, like, those conversations, or drinking their little tequila, whatever it is. So I think that was the thing. If it was that girl's moment, it's just different. That was like their fireside chat, that they're outside hanging with the boys, whatever. Like, there was nothing foul about it.
When that was all going crazy and trending, what are you guys saying to each other?
I thought it was hilarious what people were saying, divorce him, divorce him, all of this crazy stuff. And, like, he doesn't even like to say divorce. He's probably dying right now that I've said it, like, 6 times in a row.
Divorce.
Yeah, literally.
Divorce.
Because, like, that's whatever. So I thought it was hilarious at first, and then they hurt my feelings. And then, like, one night I broke down, and I'm like, why are you guys talking about my husband like this? Yeah. Like, you don't know him. You don't know who he is. And if anybody's met him, they know he's the sweetest guy and will do anything for anybody.
Yeah, it was just perceived in not the correct way.
Yes. And so that really hurt that they were talking about my husband like that. Because for me, it's like, talk about me all you want, but don't come for my family. Never.
Yeah.
Like, because I've been in the limelight long enough where I can brush things off, have my little powwow about it. You're not going to know I cried about it, but I'd be crying about some stuff.
Right. You know?
But I'm also... I only cry about it because I can't clap back. Just know that.
Why not? Why couldn't you?
I hurt their feelings.
You're like, you don't want me to clap back.
Yeah, and it's just like, classy, you know?
Classy. But
yes, because whenever I was younger, I used to have Twitter fingers too.
Oh, okay.
Like, my agent, like, Simone, can you take that down?
No, no.
You know? Because I would go off on people, because who are you to say? And so every now and then, if I say something, it's like slick and clever.
Right.
But I can really go there.
Yeah, you're just like, it's better to not.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, Jonathan has never...
They're in the drafts.
Yeah, yeah.
They're in the drafts.
You draft them and you never send them.
Because if I at least
Everyone's
type it
gonna
out,
hack
I feel
your
better.
Twitter. I hope someone hacks your Twitter and just rips. No, can you imagine? We're like, damn.
Because they're like quoted.
Literally. Okay, Jonathan has never gotten to go to the Olympics before with you. What are you most excited about for him to experience?
Well, hopefully he gets to go, because that's usually like their training camp.
No.
And he's working on a new contract. So hopefully he'll work in his new contract at least like 2 days.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's like, hey, personal day.
Yeah.
But some teams are really, really nice about, like, if you work with their family relations, some are more family oriented than others. So fingers crossed, we'll get to see him in the stands. So I'm excited for him to see that. One, I'm excited to see him to see the Olympics because football's not in the Olympics. And he always says it's like the harder sport. It's universal. And I'm like, so why isn't it in the Olympics if not every country does it?
Period.
But no, just to see that spirit. And I'm at Paris. I think they'll do a beautiful job. And he doesn't travel overseas too much. Mm-hmm. The first time he went overseas was like when I think he was on the Texans and they went to London. Like he had to get a passport. He never had a passport before.
Oh, so you're like, come with me, babe. Yes. Let me show you the world. Yes. Literally. Yes. Literally. Okay. Regardless of what happens in mm-hmm. Paris,
yeah.
What do you hope your legacy is?
To be an advocate for anything that I've been outspoken about, mental health, foster care, ADHD, whatever that is, but also just someone that gave it her all, never gave up, but also had fun and enjoyed her career, because I think a lot of times athletes might look back at their career and be like, I wish I had more fun, or I wish I did this differently. But I'm kind of at that age where I don't really have any more regrets because I'm a little bit older. I'm more mature. Everything I've done has kind of been on like my time. So I don't have regrets.
I think that is so beautiful. And I think first I would just like to thank you because hearing so much of what you're talking about, like you are so perceived on the internet and there's so much pressure and it's difficult to open up and sit and be honest and vulnerable. Yeah. And I appreciate you trusting me with your story and this experience because I am such a huge fan of yours. I think you are so much more than gymnastics, but you are kick-ass badass as a gymnast, obviously the greatest of all time. Yeah. So I just cannot wait to see what's next for you. And I don't just mean obviously the Olympics, like just your life and your career and Simone Biles. And I love you. Congrats.
Thank you.
Congrats. Oh my God, we did it!
Yay!
This episode is brought to you by DoorDash. Want $0 delivery fees? Try Dash Pass by DoorDash. Daddy gang, I love being home. I love to be cozy, comfortable, laying on the couch. I can't tell you how many times I need something, but I am too lazy to get up and get out of the house. And sometimes I need food or groceries, you name it. Dash Pass gets it delivered right to my door and yours too. It is only $9.99 a month, so I think it's a really good deal, Daddy Gang. So get $0 delivery fees on eligible orders with Dash Pass, and new members get a 30-day free trial. Terms apply. Sign up today.